Hello, it's Brody. I love bringing mummification to you each week, and if you'd like to support me to keep doing that, you can make a once-off donation through the Acast supporter feature. There's no regular subscription, and your donation will help pay our music license, buy audio gear, and put fuel in my car so I can keep interviewing the amazing women who share their stories with us. There's a link in the show description and episode show notes.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to Mummification. I'm your host, Brody Matner. This podcast is a space for women and parents to talk about how they're feeling. And sometimes they feel like swearing. So this episode may not be suitable for young ears. Thank you for chatting with me. I'm so excited.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. And I'm so sorry it's taken a while to get this happening.
Oh, no, it's so fine. I will introduce you.
All right. Yeah, tell me when you started recording.
Well, I'm very excited to be speaking with you, Beth Stevens, who is one half of the band The Teeny Tiny Stevies. Thank you again for chatting with me. It's it took us a little while, but we're here.
Oh, thank you, Brody. It is such a delight to be chatting with you. The kids are in bed.
Yes.
Are your kids in bed?
They are, but my 3-year-old's still flapping around in bed.
She's there. Does that cause you a bit of anxiety, sort of still hearing them in the background?
I've got headphones on.
Not knowing when they're really going to... Oh, great.
Is your little boy asleep?
He is. I just walked in the door and my partner, I think the door was just about to slam behind me and he just grabbed it just in time. So I think that was a sure sign that he had just fallen to sleep.
Well, I'll start with our first... ask everyone the same first question, which is not parent-related. If you were stuck on a desert island and you could take one meal, one drink, and one personal item, what would they be?
I was thinking about this today and, look, I feel like my answers are quite predictable, but I'll say them anyway. The personal item would definitely be a guitar. The drink would be coffee. I feel like it would be a lot of people's drink. And I was thinking what I would love to eat just all the time more than anything, and it would be a huge platter of sushi.
Oh, that's a good one.
Those are my three things.
That's good. So we're both in Melbourne, and we're now heading into our fifth COVID lockdown tonight.
Yes, that is correct.
How are you? How are you feeling?
I was scrolling the socials this afternoon, and then I saw a couple of things pop up about Victoria might be heading into another lockdown. That's sort of when the anxiety started, I think, for me. And then it's just so funny because things come back to you so quickly. And I remember last year, I was just hooked on watching the press conferences. And it was funny, like every time I would watch a press conference, I would get quite teary. But it would also cause me sort of, assurance and comfort also. So that's why I was sort of watching them all the time. And I got quite obsessed.
But how has COVID affected you and your music? Have you been able to kind of use the experience to create more, or have you felt a bit emotionally drained and not creative?
Yeah, look, to be honest, I sort of feel the latter. I think with which is interesting because I think Bill, who I am in the Teeny Tiny Stevies with, and who is my sister, she has. I'm speaking on her behalf right now, but I feel confident that she would say something similar, only because she has created a few very good things as a result of, you know, what's happened with COVID. So I'd say that she probably has. Well, she sort of, you know, took what was going. She wrote a couple of songs last year. One was the Stay Home song that we released, just as a sort of DIY video home recording, which was explaining what was going on, because we had lots of people contact us asking, you know, can you write a song explaining what's going on with this virus and the lockdowns and everything like that. And so she really just took that and tried, and she came up with a beautiful song. And full credit to her for coming up with that. And then also a little bit later on in the year, she wrote a song called Melbourne Will Meet Outside, which was, essentially.
That just made me bawl. I think I emailed you.
You have a title of that. And, so I think she did really well last year of sort of taking what was going on at the time and using that for creative purposes. But I don't feel like I felt very drained, for sure.
You, and as you mentioned, your sister, Bill, you started the Little Stevies in 2006.
That's right, yeah.
And then when did you start the Teeny Tiny Stevies, and what spurred that on?
Well, we started the Teeny Tiny Stevies probably like 6 years ago now, which seems like ages ago, but it honestly feels like yesterday still. And we started it because we had been playing and performing and touring as the Little Stevies for years and years, since we were teenagers. And it just sort of reached a point where Bill had fallen pregnant with her first child, and we were touring lots at that stage, and it just sort of became a bit apparent that we weren't necessarily going to be able to tour in exactly the same way or the same capacity going forward for the next little while. And we just sort of had to diversify and just, you know, ask ourselves some challenging questions as well. As we all do at different stages in our professional lives, and sort of work out how, you know, we decided that we wanted to keep making music and keep doing it and keep creating. But it became obvious that we had to change some particular things and diversify. We couldn't just keep, you know, trying to get through the same doors that weren't opening, essentially.
Yes. Okay.
So at that point, we were considering between doing the musical comedy, which now seems hilarious that we were even considering that, or some kids' music. And we tried the kids' music first because Bill's son at the time was going through toilet training.
Ah, yes.
And she was looking for resources that might be helpful for that. And I don't think she found many. And so that was that. Our On the Toilet song was the very first kids' song that we attempted writing. And it's been one of the strong standing ones.
Yeah, we sing it a lot.
That we end the set with every show.
Actually, my 3-year-old has a question for you.
Yeah.
Which she doesn't know that I'm talking to you because it was too hard to explain. But every time we listen to On the Toilet, she asks at the end, there's someone laughing. And she always says, who's that laughing? And I say, oh, I'm not sure. And she says, why are they laughing? And I say, I'm not sure. And so I thought, oh, I've got to ask.
That I just love the fact, you know, I just love the fact that you pick up on little things like that that you'd never expect.
Yeah.
I love that. That is, in fact, Bill laughing, because when we recorded that song, we just decided to do like one more take of overdubbed vocals, and we're like, let's just put some laughter in. We'll just do a laughing track, and then we'll sort of put the laughter in different spots. And she was trying to make me laugh. So that particular take was just her trying to make me laugh. And so she was just being really silly. And so it stayed in the end, just to give it a positive vibe.
I will tell her.
For no other reason but that.
Some kids' music can be really grating for adults, but mm-hmm. your kids' music is awesome for kids and adults. How have you managed to kind of bridge that gap?
Well, I mean, thank you for saying that it's not annoying.
It's not annoying.
I honestly think if you listen to anything on repeat that much, it becomes annoying. But look, I think right from the get-go, we always wanted to make the kids' music sonically just sound exactly the same as we would a Little Stevie's album and a Little Stevie song, but we're just singing about something different. That is relatable for kids as well. And I guess also with the topics that we cover, we try to cover things that can be relatable for kids and parents and be sort of cross-generational, I guess.
Yep.
And that's probably why families can enjoy it together and do enjoy it together. But, yeah, we certainly put a lot of concentration, you know, into the sonic part of it, and we try and make the songs as complex and impressive as we possibly can.
Well, because you cover some really big topics and themes like recycling and the environment and family structures and body autonomy and death.
Yeah,
and lots of other ones. I just picked the light ones.
I know they're huge, aren't they?
They're really big, but you managed to do it in a way that you're teaching kids and they'll understand, but it doesn't feel too heavy.
That's good.
Yeah, but like, how have you done that? Because it feels to me like you guys have a background in psychology or teaching or something. Your music, it makes me want to be like a more conscious, better parent. Because
that's so nice. Oh my gosh.
No, but
what a compliment is that?
The way you explain things and the way you kind of put it in a really kid-friendly way but without dumbing it down. It's really good.
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, first of all, the last album that we made, The Thoughtful Soul for Little People, all of those were suggestions. So all of those song themes were suggestions that came from people, like, you know, followers of the band, because we put a call out and we just said, you know, what would you like songs to be written about? We also did that for the album before as well. And so all of those topics were suggested, and a lot of them were suggested more than once and, you know, a few times. So obviously we were like, oh, wow, well, you know, there is an audience for this. There is a need for this. So let's give it a go. And, yeah, it's funny, like when you sort of I think there are a couple of topics that I was a bit fearful about. I think the death theme was certainly a little bit sort of fearful to have a go at. I remember that at the time, though, Bill was just like, let's just give it a go. We just have to start and see where it takes us. And I think that's often the thing with creativity is that the fear can get in the way so often, and it does with me all the time, that you don't even start.
Yeah.
But you have to start, and sometimes you have to just start writing things to realize that, no, that's not the right direction.
Yeah.
I can sort of see that this is going somewhere good. And then you sort of follow that. So I think that's really what we did. And also I should really say that there was a huge amount of thought, and there always is a huge amount of thought put into the lyrics, because, you know, we do know that the lyrics have such a lasting effect, and they're the thing that's what people remember the most, all those messages and lyrics. So, yeah, there are drafts and redrafts and redrafts and redrafts until we've, you know, thought about every single word and what it means and how it's going to be received.
Well, you've done a really good job.
But it's funny how you said before, listening to your songs makes me want to be another parent. I wouldn't say that either. Oh, Bill and I, we don't think that we're like amazing at this stuff. So we certainly don't feel like we're, you know, the know-all of just being amazing parents at all, struggling all the time.
Oh, yeah, because it's hard.
And not knowing the right way to model and do the right things. And, you know, you reflect on your behaviour for the day and go, oh, gosh, that wasn't great.
Well, have you felt differently about creating kids' music since you had your baby?
That's a really good question. I actually don't know that I have, to be honest, because, yeah, we did start writing this music a few years before I had my own. And, yeah, I wouldn't say probably it's changed. it's funny, when we did the first album, we did an interview with someone and they actually brought it to our attention that, you know, we'd written all the songs from, you know, sort of singing from the child's perspective in the first person, and we weren't even aware that we'd had done that. And then that sort of became a thing, and for the next couple of albums we were sort of like, oh, well, this is really important, because I guess when kids are singing along to this, that's quite an empowering thing if you're singing words from the first person's perspective. I don't think it has since mine's come along, but maybe that's just because this all exists and mine's just sort of, I don't know, slotted in. or maybe I need to be more reflective. I don't know.
How old was your son when you started making music again, or when you returned to work? Feels a bit clinical for what you do, because it's so beautiful and creative. But when you started working again, how old was he?
Well, I mean, we were doing music stuff and we were recording right up until, I think, quite right, you know, right through my pregnancy. And then we did our first gig when he was 6 weeks old, and it was at the Melbourne Museum in Melbourne.
Oh, nice.
And he came along. It was on a weekday, and so my partner was working, and so I decided to bring him along and sort of try it out. And, yeah, someone who was working there looked after him in the pram while we played, and it was a big success. And actually I remember sort of, you know, driving home thinking to myself, oh, wow, I did that. I brought this baby to this gig and, you know, organized this stuff, and it was, and now I'm nearly home and it's all gone, you know, really smoothly. And that was a real confidence boost, I remember, for me.
Because 6 weeks is still a bit nerve-wracking leaving the house.
Yes, definitely. So that's why I think I felt so empowered by it. But also then, you know, a few weeks later we went and did a festival, and, you know, that depending on what the show is and what the gig is and what the environment is, it's a whole another different set of things you need to navigate.
Yeah.
So I think I didn't feel empowered the next one.
Well, have you gone on any tours or spent any kind of time away from your family?
So Remy, our son, he came on two trips with us when he was in the first year of his life, so maybe about sort of 6 months-ish or 8 months-ish both. And it was hard work. It was such hard work. So the first trip was about 7 days long, and the second one was 4 or 5, and it was epic. It was so hard. We had, you know, we organised people to look after him while we were playing, but then, you know, things like when we're going to do radio interviews, you know, our bandmates would be looking after him, and, you know, having to deal with a whole lot of screaming and unpredictableness, you know, a baby, of just not knowing whether they're going to sleep or be hungry or be chill with, you know, people they don't know. And then trying to actually, like, logistically travel. So in, you know, getting baby seats in hire cars and taxis, and it was a total nightmare. Having said that, though, such great memories. You know, we were at a festival in WA, and I just remember this one night I could not get Remy to sleep. He just screamed for hours, and we're in this festival sort of, you know, arena with everyone camping on top of each other, and it was like a nightmare. It felt like I was in this never-ending nightmare, and I was ended up screaming and just crying and, you know, sobbing, and then Bill came back to the accommodation and the room, and she just sort of saw the situation, and she just said, I think you need to bring the baby out with us. I think we need to go out to the festival. I think we need to go and have some fun. And this was at like 11 p.m. And it was just a really good circuit breaker. And I was just like, okay. I think I just needed someone to tell me what to do at that stage. And so we took the baby out with us, and we had a dance, and we just, you know, he was awake, so we just went.
You might as well be doing something
went with
that you
what
enjoy.
He was doing. Yes, exactly. So even though that was horrible at the time, gosh, it makes a good memory, and I'm so glad it happened.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
How do you manage all that when it feels really hard, or if you have to go away or do a gig somewhere and, you know, Remy's unwell or teething or something is going on? How do you feel about it, and how do you... Don't really mean, probably just answered it really.
How do you just jump in and do it?
Yeah.
No. I think each situation is a bit different. But I've got to say, I've got a great partner who is very supportive, you know, and I think, you know, when you're following any job that's quite unpredictable and doesn't really follow any routine and really music and performing and touring is that. It's not an office job, and it doesn't follow office hours. You know, the hours are all over the shop. You know, when you do media things, it could be any time of day for any amount of time, short or long. Playing can be night or day. The logistics of traveling is all over the place. So, yeah, I mean, if you're parenting with another person, like, yeah, it's obviously essential to for both people to be supportive of each other to make it work. Otherwise, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So he's great. He's great like that, and he's very much behind everything, and so he does everything that he can, you know, that's within his control to make it happen, which is awesome.
What surprised you about becoming a parent? Are you the kind of parent? Someone asked me once, what do you do as a parent that you thought you'd never do? And I was like, right. Everything?
Yes, I mean, well, I enter into like very childish arguments with my 3-year-old all the time.
But are you the kind of parent that you thought you'd be?
I mean, probably not as good a parent as I thought I would be, but I think that's probably fair. Maybe. Yeah. I don't think I'm too bad. You know, I think everyone's got their strengths and their weaknesses. But I feel like I could be far more patient, and I could be, you know, more engaged. And, you know, sometimes I look at my partner, you know, playing with our son, and he seems to have a lot of patience, you know, for doing play cooking and other, you know, playing with the trains and stuff like that. And I don't think I have as much patience for that.
Yeah.
I think which I feel a bit guilty about a lot of the time. But then I know, you know, I provide different things and different experiences.
Yes.
So it all sort of balances out in the end.
I know, I say that to my husband all the time. I'm like, oh, you're so, you like think of fun games and you like play good things, and I just kind of get through, and like how.
But I also think that's probably, you know, got to do with whoever's doing more of the caring,
yep,
and the sort of the day-to-day caring. It can be tiring,
yeah,
you know, coming up with ideas and just, you know, and when you're doing a bit less of it, sometimes you can have more energy for it.
Yeah, I've found that since going back to work.
Yeah,
much more energy when I'm with the
girls.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. It's amazing what a break can do.
Yeah, don't feel
people
so kind
you
of,
love.
Yeah, I know, but you do, you need it, because if you're with anyone, you know, whether you birthed them or not, if you're with anyone for, you know, 24/7, and it is, because it's not, well, I mean, my 1 year old doesn't sleep, so it's not like it stops at 7 p.m.
Oh gosh, yeah.
You know, so it's it's
that's hectic.
Yeah, it's a bit hectic. Yeah, a bit tiring.
It's exhausting. Oh my gosh. And isn't it ridiculous the way that you just crave time by yourself
and then you feel bad
alone
about
time
it.
Yep. And then when you do have it, you either feel guilty or you look at your phone of all your photos of them, thinking, I wish I was with them. It's such a ridiculous thing that happens.
But what have you found to be, not necessarily the most challenging, but what have you found really challenging about being a parent?
Gosh, so many things. I mean, navigating it with another person, I think that's probably one of the hardest things.
Yeah.
And aligning expectations with each other. And that's just like a constant, ongoing, ever-evolving thing as well.
Because it changes as your baby changes.
Exactly. Your kids whatever stage you're going through, whatever the challenge is at that particular stage.
Yeah.
And I guess you can't anticipate how either of you will feel, or act or think until you're in it. I feel like before our son came, we did a fair bit of sort of talking through scenarios because that's what we do. But you can't know until you're in it. Because you haven't got that emotion that you're working with until you're in a situation. Definitely the negotiation that goes on constantly would definitely be one of the most challenging things, I'd say.
Yeah.
I think I went into having a kid with very low expectations, which I think was a really good thing. I think I was really lucky to see Bill have kids, and sort of see that closely. And she's a fantastic mum, and she always does an excellent job. But I was lucky in the fact that I just got to see sort of warts and all, a lot of the challenges that happen and that can occur. So I was expecting the worst because of that. I hope this is coming out the right way.
Yeah, no.
Not that watching her was the worst. That's not what I'm saying. But I was sort of expecting everything to go wrong in a way.
Yep.
And I think for a lot of things I had a bit of a pleasant surprise.
That's a great way to go into it.
Actually, when you said earlier in an email, what's something empowering that you could give to
just
someone
lower your expectations?
Yes, I actually thought I think that's it, because someone else said that to me too, and I think it's true. Just low expectations, because as soon as it's like anything, as soon as you start to imagine that something will be a particular way or assume something, it's probably going to be the opposite.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like that's so common.
Well, because I've got lots of nieces and nephews, and so does on my side and my husband's side. And so before we had Marley, we were like, oh, yeah, we'll do this as parents and we won't do that and we're going to be like this. And we kind of cherry-picked the best bits from all of our siblings' parenting. But we both totally forgot to factor in that Marley would have a really – really strong opinion.
Yes, exactly.
And she might not necessarily do all of the things that we thought she would do. So that was a bit of a, I think that was one of the biggest shocks for me. I was like,
definitely.
Right, you don't like things, or you do like things that I you, okay.
You're your own human.
Yeah, who knew?
I know. I can't necessarily control everything about you or how you feel or think.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not sure if you had this experience. One of the other challenges that I feel like I'm also still, coming up against as well is that I thought making friends would be really easy once I had a kid. I was sort of, as an adult, I already sort of thought, it was, I was sort of looking at my social circle and noticing, that it was getting smaller.
Yeah.
Without making it sound like I've got no friends. just naturally, as you get more busy and you get older and you become more aware of your likes and
yes.
your preferences, and you've just got less time. So you you're more specific with who you invest it with.
Absolutely.
Your friendship circle, you know, does get smaller. And I thought that having a kid, it would be so easy to make friends, you know, and it just hasn't really turned out that way for me. And probably because of the personality I am as well. Just, you know, it takes me a little while to establish friendships probably, or, you know, really open up and trust and all those kinds of things.
Yep.
But yeah, I thought that just, you know, if you have a baby and someone else has a baby and that's your best friend. But it just didn't, it wasn't like that. And so I think that's been been an ongoing thing.
Do you
that I've grappled with?
I imagine that when the girls go to school, that I'll be friends with all of their friends' parents.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it's going to happen.
I've heard that's a thing.
I imagine that they're probably going to just annoy me more than anything else. Like,
right.
I'm going to be like, yeah, oh, no, do you fair. Have to be friends with Betsy? Her mum's really annoying. But it'd be nice if we could pick and choose.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Well, I'm hoping that I can become, you know, best buddy.
Yeah, it'd be really
I'm
nice.
My kid can get me friends. I think I said that to someone the other day, and as soon as I said it, I realized how sad that sounds.
No, I think it's great. Why not? Like, you're going to spend time with them, you know, especially if it's a school true. Parent, you're going to do all, you know, you could go on camp together. That could actually be really great.
Right. Yeah.
Well, if you were friends with another parent, you could both volunteer to go on camp, and then it'd be fun.
That's true. Yes, I guess so. You're right. You should do that.
Maybe our kids can go to the same school, and then we can be friends. And
then yes, exactly.
Go on school camps together.
But you know what? Like, the friend thing, I feel like that's something that's just so common amongst everyone. But everyone's also so shy and just embarrassed to say it out loud.
Oh, it's hard as soon to make as you friends actually when you're do an adult. Say it,
it's so hard to say as an adult. But when you eventually do, you know, I feel like 9 times out of 10 you will get exactly the same response or validation from the other person, and then it's just a sense of relief.
Yeah.
To just go, oh, and then you sort of both, you know, you don't even have to say it, but you're both just sort of like, oh, let's be friends. it's like school all over again.
But it'd be nice if it was, because kids seem to make friends quite easily, you know, you just, they walk up to each other and
they do,
start
don't
playing.
They? Yeah.
But that'd be, did you have a mother's group?
I did, yeah. And we met a few times, but it just sort of petered out really.
Yep.
But I've got one good friend that I kept from it.
Yeah.
That I do still see. And look, and that's funny, you know, it's also a great thing when you realise that you only need one or two to make you feel like you've got
lots.
A huge friendship circle. You know, one or two great friends who you're just sort of keeping in regular contact with.
Yes.
You know, week to week to make you feel amazing.
Yeah. It's having that support so nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Had you heard the word matrescence?
Say that again.
Have you heard the word matrescence?
No.
Oh, so this is not like a test, but it's basically it's the idea similar to adolescence, but for a mum when she becomes a mum, it's this this period of change essentially after you become a mum, and it's hormonal and mental and it's this big shift that you go through, and then I haven't kind of done enough research to know whether you come out the other side and you're like done with matrescence like you are with adolescence, or whether it's this constantly evolving beast, which I sort of imagine it is. But do you feel like you went through some kind of identity shift after you became a mum?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I reckon one of the first things relating to that was when I gave birth, and I sort of felt like this completely unspoken pressure, because obviously no one said this. So it could have just been made up in my own head, but I sort of felt like I had this overwhelming feeling that I had just been a vessel for this human And it was just my obligation to hand this kid over to everyone else, you know, as sort of like this, as like this gift, you know, sort of, and all of a sudden, you know, no one cared about me.
Yes. Yep.
Like everyone cared about the baby, which they should. And obviously, and it's such an exciting time, you know, when new life comes into the world. But yeah, I think as a mum who's gone, you know, when you've gone through that experience, and it's, you know, it's pretty traumatic and just hugely life changing. Then when all the attention is on the baby, that really affected me. And I remember that my mum was pretty much the only person that every single day she rang me and she asked how I was before she asked about the baby.
Oh, that's nice.
And it was just the most powerful thing, and it was so special to me, and I just really valued it so much. And she did that for months. So that was probably one of the first things in terms of identity, of just going, oh, God, am I literally just here to make this thing, and then what, you know,
and then what
is my purpose done? Type thing. So yeah, definitely a huge shift and a long adjustment over time.
Yeah, it's not a quick one.
No, not,
well, it wasn't.
Not at all.
I mean, I'm, you know, can't speak for everyone. Wasn't quick for me.
No. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
But it wasn't. It wasn't necessarily, you know, painstaking the entire time. But it was. Yeah, I think it took me about 18 months to feel like an okay version of myself, like I was okay with the new version of myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And someone said this to me, and I can't remember who it was, but I remember them saying sort of something along the lines of, you know, when you're trying to push against what's naturally happening, that can make things so much worse. That sort of, if you just can try and go with what's naturally occurring or whatever, you can actually, you can make your life so much easier, enjoyable, or sort of, you know, once you reach that sort of point of acceptance of,
yes,
well, this is how this is going to be for this particular time or whatever. But when you're just sort of pushing against it and against it, it can be so hard to manage, because you've got such these intense emotions and feelings all the time.
Yeah, I had an auntie come over when Marley was very little, and I'd been upstairs trying to put Marley to bed. And of course she wasn't going to bed because I had plans, and and I knew that my auntie was at the front door, and I was texting her, and I was like, just wait there, I'll be down soon, she's going to go to sleep soon. And of course she didn't go to sleep soon, and I came downstairs and opened the door, and Marley was awake, and I said, oh, you know, I was going to put her down, and then I was going to have a shower and be like ready for when you got here. And she looked at me and said, haven't you surrendered yet?
No, yeah, right.
And it just, like, it really stuck with me, and it was like I wanted to get it tattooed on my forehead to remind me every
day.
Yeah,
I love that. That's great.
And it really stuck with me, and it helped me a lot, I think. I went, oh, right, because it's I think often the word surrender is associated with weakness.
Yes.
I think in this instance it was really empowering. I was like, oh, right, if I just go with it, it's going to be much easier. And it was.
That's so great. I do you ever feel, though, that in also moments like that, even though you can just fiercely agree with, you know, something that's been said by someone like that, and I feel like that's something that I would just hold on to also, but at the same time I would be furious as well, because what do you know?
Yeah.
And probably a lot, because they've obviously probably done it for a lot longer than
I have. Yeah, but I always find myself being like, oh, yeah, but it would have been different when your kids were little.
Exactly. Like, there's this thing about someone coming in and making a sort of, a fleeting comment, or, you know, that seems like someone's just sort of making a very throwaway comment about something that you have just put so much energy and time into for hours or weeks or whatever.
Yes.
And it's just sort of, it can feel like it's really dismissing everything that you've done. or all the planning you've put into something.
Yeah.
But at the same time, as you say, sometimes, yeah, you just need to surrender to what's happening.
But that's hard too. I mean, I've got
conflict.
Like between when that happened and now, there's a decent 2.5 years.
So
hindsight's pretty nice. But
that sure is.
Yeah, but so I'm not sure that it was like a massive light bulb moment for me right when it happened, because I was like, I wanted to have a shower and now I'm gross and I'm not showered for the day. And I was.
Once the dust had settled, then it was a real.
Yeah, then it was great. I don't know that I had anything else planned that I wanted to ask you, but you've been so generous with how you've felt. Is there anything that you want to say about what it's been like for you becoming a mum?
Oh gosh,
I know, it's a big question. Sorry, it's like quarter to nine at night, and I'm like, "How do you feel about being a mum?" You're like, "Oh, I'd like to go to sleep, please."
No, not at all. It's, you know what? It's just so nice to speak to other mums, and I guess this sort of relates back to the friendship thing. But it's so nice to speak to other people who are just going through similar things, because it just makes you feel validated in all the challenges that you have and all the struggles. So yeah, look, chatting with you, Brodie, it's a delight. Oh. It's so lovely.
Oh, it's been my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. But I will. You sort of answered it before. But is there something that someone said to you, or that you would say now to a mum that's empowering?
Yeah. Look, at the end of the day, probably. Your baby's going to just think you're a hero no matter what, you know, regardless of all the guilt that you feel about all different things, or, you know, the way that you've handled yourself, or, you know, any regrets that you might have. They're probably still going to look at you and just think you're the bee's knees.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Yeah, it is very lovely. Very lucky.
Have you... Do you find that you get a lot of mum guilt?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, I feel guilt about a lot of different things, so I'm assuming that that's mum guilt.
Well, yeah, I think someone said, even when I was saying mum guilt, I was like, oh, I think maybe mum guilt is like when you do stuff but you feel guilty because you should just be doing stuff for your family. You might not feel like that, but
if it's like relating specifically to that, I would probably say maybe that's probably an area that I reckon within our family unit that I've been quite strong-headed with, or maybe strong-headed is the wrong word, or just sort of aware of sort of going, I remember with music, you know, when my partner and I got together, you know, for those first few years before Remy came along, that it was just, I've always sort of made sure I've sort of reinforced the thing of, this is not going away. Like, this is what I do. This is what I will always do. This is, if you want me, this is a part of me type thing.
Yeah.
Because I think, yeah, I think, you know, when you have kids and you introduce different things into a relationship over time, it's easy for other things to naturally be pushed out, and to be deprioritized. And if you want to keep things, you have to fight for them. you really do, because at the end of the day, you know, no one's really going to look out for ourselves more than we are ourselves.
I think that's your empowering message. I think so. I think that's awesome.
Oh, that's good. Can you say it back to me so I remember what it was?
I'll paraphrase. It was that you've got to look after yourself, because no one else will, but you've got to fight for what's important to you. And I suppose that,
yes, absolutely,
goes back to your sense of identity. You know, you need to kind of stand firm for what you feel like makes you you.
100%. Otherwise, you're no good for anyone else as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, you have to do the things that make you shine, yes, and that make you passionate about living. Because you know, in our experience, I look at Remy now and just how much he, you know, he's nearly three and he just thrives around music, and he sings all the time. You know, between you and I, I'm not, there could be a few pitch issues. No, I'm just joking. He's three. But he just loves it so much, you know, and I know that that is a direct result of how much singing happens in the household.
Yep.
And how much singing I've done to him since he's been born. And I feel really proud about that. And so that's always, you know, for the rest of time, as long as he's living with us and everything, that's obviously, that's going to be a thing, you know,
yep,
that becomes important to him too, which is great.
I think that's beautiful. Because, well, it is, because it's part of you too. And now that's part of him. And isn't that nice?
No, it is lovely. Yeah, it's great. It's nice to feel good about something that you're modelling to your kids. Because, gosh, there's a lot of bad stuff that we end up modelling. Good to feel really good about something.
It is nice. Oh, Beth, thank you so, so much for chatting with me. It's been just awesome. I've loved it. Thank you.
Thanks, Brody. It's been such a delight, and I hope you do get some sleep tonight. Maybe. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Yes, I hope you get to sleep too.
I can't wait. Can't wait to put my head on the pillow. All right. Well, it's lovely chatting with you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks so much, Beth.
All right. I'll speak to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Thanks, Brody. See ya.
Thank you very much to Beth Stevens for chatting with me today. I hope I wasn't too much of a fangirl. There are links in the show notes to the Teeny Tiny Stevies on Spotify. They come highly recommended by my three-year-old and me. Mummification is produced and hosted by me, Brody Matner. Our beautiful music is composed by Ben Talbot Dunn. If you're enjoying the show, please rate, review and subscribe. You'll be notified when a new episode is released, and it helps us reach new audiences, which in turn will hopefully help more women feel less alone. Thanks for listening.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.